show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Is my creation! Life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get counted down. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
The truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Coming to you from the Guy James Show today, here from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida, Naples, Fort Myers area, all around the country and all around the world. So glad to have all of you along with us today. We hope to have a great show for you today. We've got, one of our regulars, Dave McMichael, former CIA analyst. He is one of the signatories that sent that letter to Tenet asking him to give back his Medal of Freedom, along with Larry Johnson, a friend of the show, and Ray McGovern as well, and Jim Marcinkowski, and forget who else. But anyway, we're going to have Dave on at the top of the next hour. And at the bottom of this hour, we're going to have Head On Radio Network show host Jeff Allen Wolf. And Jeff and I will go at it and discuss a few things germane to, to everything that's going on right now. My God, there's no shortage of things to talk about right now, is there? Whoa, I can't get used to the fact that, I carry one of those little, stupid little recorders. That's how bad my memory is anymore. I got one of those little, little voice recorders that's about the size of a pen. And it seems like I'm constantly talking in it nowadays. I'll be driving down the road and there'll be something on the radio I hear. I'll watch Tweety Bird or one of the talk news shows and hear something on there and heard Junior Bush's little tantrum last night. I was going to say something. I guess I shouldn't say. I shouldn't call the president that name. They might stop over here, and I wouldn't want that. But he is one anyway. I am so dismayed when I hear George Bush get up in front of the cameras and talk. I don't care what it is. All he has to do is open his mouth. My wife called me last night. I was working, and she called me. She says, "Turn on the TV." She said, "Junior Bush is talking on American Idol right now." Well, I didn't make it in time, but I did see a clip of it. Oh, Jesus! Him and the Stepford wife there. What's her name? Laura. My God, keep those people out of the public eye. I should think he would want to stay out of the public eye. He's such a buffoon. He's such a fool. He's such an imposter. Here I go. I didn't want to be this way today. I just mentioned George Bush. I think about him making that speech last night. And, I know you know. Anyway, you can call the show today. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. And, I hope you will give us a call. I see that 66% of the people on the USA Today poll think that Bush was wrong in vetoing that bill. 66%, baby. That's bad. That's really bad. And did you notice when he was giving his speech how he kept looking away? You know, there is a picture floating around the internet. There was nobody in the room with him except a few cameramen, photographers. And so he kept looking from side to side. He looks like one of those automatrons at Disney World, you know. He's always reminded me of that when he talks. Got a little machine inside him making him move and talk and so forth, blink his eyes now and then. But he looked from side to side last night, and there was nobody in the room. And you know why he was looking from side to side? Because he can't look the American public in the eye, not the real public. He can go to these places where they've got a set-up audience for him. They've frisked him, and they've asked him to swear an allegiance to George Bush, or he goes to a military base. He always goes someplace where he knows he's in front of friends. He can't talk at all in front of a regular audience. And here he is on TV saying he's going to be vetoed the bill. And he can't even look the public square in the eye through a TV lens. What a punk. So now this very small man who is our president has, and I don't mean small in stature, physically. He's denied our troops in Iraq the equipment, the armor, the food, whatever it takes to keep them alive. He's refused to allow the money allotted by Congress to flow to the military to keep them safe and secure. He vetoed the bill. He stopped the money from going to the military. But moreover, and more importantly, he's refused to allow them to come home. I said he has refused to allow them to come home. He has refused to send the money needed to sustain them in the period between now and October 1st when they were supposed to start coming home. I want to remind everybody that a long time ago, I said this war should forevermore be called the Bush War because it was Junior Bush himself that allowed it to happen. He not just allowed it to happen, but he pushed, he connived, he used lies, treachery, and deceit to force his way and to being able to carry over his long time dream of invading Iraq and getting Saddam. All of it at the expense of someone other than him and his family. None of his family will bear any of the burden of this war. None of it. None of them will have to worry about paying the bill for this war when it comes due. None of his family's had to suffer and die in Iraq, nor will they ever do so. For unlike somebody he liked to compare himself to early on, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, another war president, Junior Bush hasn't asked his kids to sacrifice anything for their country. And we all know because of their immense wealth, none of the Bush family will suffer any financial hardships whatsoever because of having to pay the bill on the Bush-Iraq war. He continues day after day to use lies and tortured logic to try and make his point that we need to stay in Iraq for whatever reason. Again, yesterday, he said he would not allow the Congress to, and they love that word now, micromanage the war, but have the generals on the ground do it. And he conveniently forgets that when this whole occupation started, he wouldn't allow the generals on the ground to run things, but instead Rummy and Cheney and Feith and Pearl and Wolfowitz and a host of other bastards in his administration, and all of them civilians, they were running the show, and generals be damned, and generals even quit over it. He fails to mention that. Yes, Mr. Bush, there was a time you wouldn't let the generals on the ground run this war. Generals told Junior Bush that he needed several hundred thousand troops to occupy Iraq. But as you well know, Junior Bush's civilian buddy said, no, we can do it with just a few. I think we all know how that has turned out now, don't we? I watched a couple of the talk shows last night, and I'm in agreement with William Buckley. I think maybe Junior Bush is putting a monkey on the back of the Republican Party that they're going to be a long time getting rid of. These neocons thought they were getting a new St. Ronald of Reagan when they ushered Bush into the Oval Office, but they got a nastier version of Richard Nixon. And the disgrace that their party will suffer because of Junior Bush may well last for decades to come. I sure as hell hope so. And you watch this guy, and you wonder, has he any knowledge of history? Any? We know he doesn't have a hell of a lot of knowledge about a lot of things. I would think the President of the United States would be fully cognizant of a history of war, since he sent our people into one. But obviously he does not. I have to wonder if he's read any of the things that took place in the Nixon White House when the country wanted out of Vietnam and Nixon didn't. Somebody must have told Junior that he's using the same lame, ridiculous arguments that Nixon used when he's trying to defend the Vietnam War. I looked some of it up. Nixon said, and let me quote him, a precipitous withdrawal would result in a bloodbath, destabilization of Southeast Asia, would embolden our enemies, and result in more war, not less. End quote. Does that sound familiar? Is that not exactly what Junior Bush is saying right now? And if he would only take a moment to look back and see, he would see that history shows that Nixon's action did not win the war in Vietnam. But it did succeed in getting another 20,000 or so of our Americans killed in the jungles of that country. And when we finally did leave, none of Nixon's terrible, dire predictions came true. None of them. The same type of stupidity that got us into Vietnam took us into Iraq. The same damn type of stupidity. Americans didn't understand the long, violent, sectarian history of the region. Most Americans had never even heard of Sunni or Shiite, including, I suspect, Junior Bush. Hardly any of our military or intelligence people knew the language, and that is a huge barrier in a conflict like this where soldiers are going door to door and dealing directly with the people in the towns and cities and villages. Our people had no understanding of the culture in Iraq at all. And finally, just like Vietnam, our leaders figured out, or thought, anyway, they thought our superior military power would make this a cakewalk. They really did. They thought so. You could hear it. You could see it. You could see it in their actions. They even said so. Cheney said, well, weeks. I doubt months. I don't think they learned a damn thing from Vietnam. And I watched Petraeus the other day, and I think we just might have another William Westmoreland incarnate in that man. We already know for a fact that Donald Rumsfeld was just as incompetent, maybe even more so than Robert McNamara. This morning, I had a long conversation with an ardent Republican who strongly believes that Bush's veto was the right thing to do. It was all I could do to listen to him. This gentleman believes that continuing the war will eventually stabilize the entire region. And so I started questioning him about the sectarian strife between the Sunni and the Shia, and it became immediately apparent to me that he thought their differences were no different than a couple of Methodists and Presbyterians fighting it out. He had no clue about the fact that the Shia have been driven into the ground ever since the end of the Ottoman Empire. He had no idea as to the history of the French and the English in the region before we ever got there. He didn't understand that the Shia have been persecuted for all these years, and now getting a little bit of power, they're not going to give it up. He doesn't understand at all that whether we go now or later, the violence is still going to continue. We will have no effect on it. We cannot have any effect on it. It is not our fight. It never was. And it's only my opinion, but I think the only thing Junior Bush's veto will succeed in doing is getting more and more of our young men and women killed in Iraq. Well, maybe not the only thing. could have probably also helped to keep the fires of hatred for America burning in the Iraqis who want to get us the hell out of their country. Eventually, our participation in this debacle created by the Junior Bush administration is going to end someday. We can cut our losses now, or we can continue to ship flag-draped coffins home in the dead of night out of sight the way the Bush administration likes it. We can stop the financial bleeding now, or we can continue to create what's going to become an unbearable burden for American taxpayers now and especially in the future for our kids and grandkids. And this little man, this arrogant, self-centered punk who put his signature on that veto yesterday is a total and complete loser. Not just now, but for his entire life he's been a loser. And it just confounds me that he made it into the White House. And that just shows me that the Republican Party is utterly and completely morally bankrupt and is in no way representative of the ideals and the true values of the people of the United States of America. Now the Democrats have a chance to show what they're made of. Republicans have challenged them by saying if they believe in benchmarks and such, why not just cut off the funding right now? I hope the Democrats have the guts to take them up on that challenge. If they don't do that, just how much better than the Republicans are they? I've got several emails today, and I completely agree. What should the next move be? People are arguing what kind of a bill should they send to Bush now? Lots of arguments going on amongst Democrats. What kind of a bill should we send now? Should we acquiesce on some of these issues? Should we compromise on some of these issues? Should we give him just a couple of months worth of funding? Should we include this? Should we include that? I got an idea, and I agree with many of the emails I got today. Don't do anything. Nothing. Nothing. Don't send him another bill. And then what are his options? He wants to play chicken? Let's play, baby. Let's see what the American public thinks. Do not send him another bill. And he will be forced to stop this war right now. Do not give him another chance to veto another bill. Do not compromise with the Republicans on this one iota. Do not give George Bush the chance to veto another bill. Don't send him another bill. Make him eat it. As we all know, or as we all should know, there is enough money in the pipeline to safely bring our troops home. Bring them home. Forget more legislation. They're going to play politics with it. I thought that was one of the more ridiculous things that I think I've seen said. I marked it down here. I don't know what I did with it. Anyway, Bush yesterday said that... Oh, I remember what it was. I remember what it was. And honestly, if I worked day and night, I couldn't have come up with anything even close to as ridiculous for Bush to say than in his little speech yesterday. He said, "Time to put politics behind us." This, from this little man, who under the tutelage of... the devil's earthly representative, Karl Rove, has made politics the be-all and the end-all of everything. He said it's time to put politics behind us. Well, I say it isn't. And this is one time that the Democrats can play politics for the good of the country. Do not send him another bill. Do not resubmit the original legislation. Sit on it. Don't send him a bill. Watch him sweat. And I firmly believe that public opinion will be on our side. Oh, I can tell. I can tell the Democrats are scared to death. Oh, what if we withdraw and things go bad there? Well, that's the chance we're going to have to take. Because first and foremost, most now, we've got to take care of our kids, our men and women in uniform, take care of our economy, and yes, we do owe the Iraqis some help. But they'll work that out. I'm confident something will get worked out, and eventually they'll get some kind of a government there. But us staying there is not going to help a thing. It's making it worse. They've got no more confidence in Maliki than the man in the moon in Iraq. The people of Iraq don't. So yes, let's keep politics in it for now, and the Democrats should stand together, and I know Joe Lieberman won't, but the Democrats should stand together, and they'll get maybe a few Republicans to stand with them and play politics with this and force him to end this war by not sending him another bill. Maybe that sounds simplistic to a lot of you. It is simplistic. They have the purse strings, and if they don't authorize any more money, he's going to have to bring those troops home. And he's going to have to begin bringing them home right away. And he's going to have to bring them home safely because, yes, there is enough money in the pipeline, and everybody will make damn sure that those troops get home safely. I don't see any other answer for this. I don't see compromising with Bush on this as anything good at all for this country. Compromise will not be good for our soldiers. It will not be good for Iraq. The time to end this thing is now. As I already mentioned, Richard Nixon screwed around and lost another 20,000 people of our people in Vietnam in what was going to be a losing cause anyway. The time to get out is now. I'd like to know what you think. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. And I heard him say yesterday aboard Air Force One, the White House press corps, just hours before vetoing a war spending bill, Bush said Tuesday that the Democrats who made the legislation a showdown over withdrawing U.S. troops could turn, quote, Iraq into a terror-spreading cauldron of chaos with their approach. Someone want to tell me what kind of conditions are there now? How easily and quickly they seem to forget what an awful situation we have there now. Oh, we got a lot of email yesterday after we had that so-called former Marine call. Maybe he was. I don't know. Didn't sound like he had the brains of an average Marine, though. Did you think so? I didn't. But I sure got a ton of email. Just about filled the old box up. I don't know how many emails the old box will take, but evidently quite a few. And I have a question for you. All of you people that listen, that regularly write emails, why the hell don't you just pick up the phone and call the show once in a while? We'd all love to hear from you, 866-546-5254. But a lot of people are evidently really convinced of that old deal that the scariest thing in the world is speaking in front of the public. Hey, you're anonymous. You're on the phone. Nobody can see you. You could be sitting there in your cutoffs and flip-flops and, you know, smoking a cigar and drinking a drink for all I care. No one's going to know. Give us a call. But I just picked out one of the emails to read to you, and I thought it was just exactly right. Wasn't done in flowery language. Wasn't done in a pseudo-intellectual style. Just putting it down on pen and paper or on computer paper, just exactly the way it is. It's from Anna in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. And it's simple and to the point. It said, Guy, the Republican caller you had yesterday completely sums up the reasons we're in such a terrible mess today. idiots elected an idiot, and we're all suffering the consequences. I don't think you can say it any plainer than that, do you? Yes, we did get a lot of feedback about that. And I noticed a couple of you asked me on the chat room, did I get anywhere with the gentleman I talked to this morning about the veto? No, of course not. I violated my rule on not talking about it to people out in the public, because I do think we're at a point now where the right-wingers can't be swayed. The ones that are left, you heard that one yesterday, you weren't gonna sway his mind with facts after facts after facts. You could not, would not, because they're not open to listening to the facts. They're trying to keep from being humiliated. They know they're wrong. Or, my God, at least I hope they know they're wrong. If they don't, God help them. God help this country. Some of them are just being stubborn and don't want to admit that Junior Bush has been a disaster. And I did see that piece by William F. Buckley, who thinks the Republicans are in serious trouble. I happen to agree. But I also think the Democrats are going to be in trouble if they don't step up to the plate right now and hang tough on this. And as I mentioned a few moments ago, they do seem to be scared that, oh, God, what if something goes wrong and we vote to defund the war and things turn into chaos over there? Hey, do what your constituents sent you there to do. You can't go wrong on that. Just do what the voters sent you there for. And this year they sent you there, put a stop to this war. Not 5 years from now, not three years from now, 2 years from now. They sent you there to stop it within a reasonable time, starting pretty doggone soon. Do remember that. We shall see how many of our legislators have the courage of their convictions, to search deep down inside their hearts and know what's right and know what's wrong, and then go vote accordingly. Or, if they take my suggestion, do not vote. Leave it lay. Make Bush come to Capitol Hill and beg. They'll give him the money. They'll make sure to give him all the money he needs to get everybody home safe and work out reasonable issues about shipping equipment out, and maybe even if they want to keep a small force in Anbar province, I don't know. But the right thing to do is start sending that 150,000 men home right now. Start the withdrawal right now. The Iraqis want it. The American people want it. And let's do it. What do you think? Do you think we ought to send up another bill? I don't think they ought to send another bill. I'd love to see them not send another bill. Well, we're going to pause for a break. I guess I've talked for a while now. And we'll be back in just a moment or two.
Turn, and there's time to every purpose. Everything turn. There is a season turn. And a time to every purpose under heaven. A time of love, a time of hate, a time of war, a time of peace, a time you may embrace, a time to refrain from embracing.
Back at you here with the Guy James Show. Welcome back, everybody. Glad to have each and every one of you along with us here today on the Guy James Show, member of the Head On Radio Network. And as promised, without further ado, another one of our Head On Radio Network show hosts, Jeff Allen Wolf, is with us. Jeff, welcome to the show.
You know, now that I'm totally depressed after listening to you for the past half hour, and not because of you, but because of the news that's coming out of Washington, it is so damn hard each day to keep an energy level going in this country with all the crap that keeps coming out of the White House.
Jeff, you're so right. I had a really good friend ask me that about that very thing just last night or night before, I can't remember, said, how do you, and it's somebody that's not very political, and they know I am, and they said, how do you listen to this stuff? How do you read this stuff every day and talk about it? It's so depressing. And I know you're in the same boat. It's real. It has to be talked about.
It is funny because, and I don't want to beat a dead horse, but my girlfriend, who's also my news producer, Natasha, when she comes home after work, she says, you know,
I don't know if she's going to like being called a dead horse.
No. She's sexy. She's a sexy thoroughbred, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, there you go. Thank you.
You know, she and I we like Olbermann, and we like Colbert, and we like Jon Stewart, and we tape it with our TiVo. Thank God for TiVo. You know, TiVo. But she says, let's watch that during, dinner. And every now and then I say, you know, I've had enough politics today. Even though this is my job and this is my profession, I really don't want to hear any more crap anymore. And it is hard. It is hard to get energized. And I'm wondering if the lack of phone calls or the lack of support when you said people email you left and right, but they don't phone in. Are we so numb to what's going on? Are we so just with our mouths hanging open saying what next? I mean, we have another aide resigning from Condoleezza Rice's office. We have scandal after scandal after scandal. It's almost like what's going to happen the next hour?
Oh,
and
yeah.
I've never seen a political administration like this with so many problems in such a short period of time. And let's paraphrase that. Obviously, it didn't happen over a short period of time, but finally coming out where the dam is finally broke, you know, and they said, okay, we can't hold it back any longer. But what the hell's happening with the media and what the hell's happening with the American public? We're just numb to this.
Yeah, I think numb is a good word. There's a lot of people. Some of this is so involved they don't understand it. I know the Gonzalez story, for example, is rather involved, and a lot of people just don't understand. And of course, the Republicans have been very successful at spinning this. Well, everybody does it, you know. You hear that so much. Well, everybody does it. He's not doing anything. Clinton did. Clinton lied too, you know. I think politics has turned to be so decadent that a lot of people have tuned it out completely. at their own peril, I might add.
The only good news that came out of all of this, and I'm sure you've seen this, and hopefully our listeners have seen it, I talked about this yesterday on my show, is it just me, because obviously without the phone lines, you know, just me hearing what I'm talking about, I don't get that dialogue that you have going, or is it slowly starting to seem that some of the media outlets are starting to get fed up and are starting to now go after the administration reporting the news rather than shutting the hell up and being in the background? For example, BBC concluded that the one-year mark Iraqi democracy was on rough road. They're blasting what's going on there. ABC came out and said the reports of Masri's death was false and part of a misinformation campaign. Are the journalists finally growing a spine, and enough is enough that even Bush and Rove and their spin machine can't hold back now the hordes of people now going for the jugular?
Well, Jeff, I think they all like to ride a winner, and I think they ride that horse as long as they think they can get, as long as they think the public's on their side and the percentage is on their side.
You know, you hit the nail right on the head, and I said that to myself yesterday, not as eloquently as you said it. A lot of negative, dirty words came out of my mouth, but
I can do that too.
That's the fact, guy. All of a sudden, because, well, the sides are lining up, the American public is saying impeachment, and everyone's getting upset, maybe we should start reporting this stuff, because if we don't, we'll look like assholes.
Yeah, exactly. You bet. Yeah, that's it. And they'll end up paying in the long run. Jeff, we've got a caller on the line, possibly with a question for you here. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Do you have a question for Jeff?
Hi, this is Juanita.
Hi, Juanita.
Well, I didn't know he was going to be on, but I'll ask him one.
Please do.
Well, I had heard a little of the hearing today before they did the vote, and there were some Republicans called in while they were voting, and they were totally against Bush, and they were, you know, saying something about they should send the same bill back to him. If they send a bill back, it's just send the same one.
What do you think, Jeff?
Do you think
that's an easy answer for Juanita. And hello, Juanita. I've seen your name so many times. It's nice to finally hear you.
Oh, really?
Well, as far as I don't have the phone line, but it's easy. Guy just said it, and I just said it. I think the Republicans are doing what the media is doing now. They're riding the winner. They realize re-election's coming up in a short period of time, and that if the Republicans don't start lining up on the winning side and start drawing lines in the sand, they're going to look like idiots. So I think I'm wondering about the sincerity of some of these Republicans deep down, if they really feel this, that they're against Bush, or they're saying to themselves, you know, everything's starting to go against this guy. We can't back a dead horse or a loser anymore. We better speak up and be the first out in the public eye to say, I'm against Bush and send that bill back. I'm hoping they're sincere, but I kind of doubt that. I think they're just lining up on sides.
Well, the number one thing on their minds, and lest anybody have any doubts, first and foremost on their minds is not necessarily ending the war, not doing what's necessarily right for our soldiers and our country. Number one is getting reelected, and that will be the main consideration they have in how they vote. And sooner or later, I think they're going to have to come around, most of them anyway.
100%. It's all about reelection. I don't think that's why my question, their sincerity about really if they want to see change. I think they're just worrying about their own backsides right now.
And we've got, I think it is 21 senators coming up, Republican senators coming up for reelection. So it's going to be a drip, drip, drip if this thing goes on very much longer. I heard them suggest that maybe they just give them a couple of months' worth of funding, $15 billion or $19 billion or whatever it was. I hope the Democrats don't do that. I hope they stand firm. Of course,
I hope so, too. But unfortunately, you said it earlier on your show that they're scared. I don't know what they're making of this war, that you said if they pull out, what if we do the wrong thing? They're in such a box right now. It's so scary. I used the analogy yesterday of the cat and the mouse. And I said, ironically, even though Bush is supposed to be the mouse because everything's going against him and the majority of the Democrats in charge of Congress and in charge of the Senate due to the election, the midterm elections, it's the other way around. The Democrats are acting like the little mice scared, and George Bush is going, we could say whatever the hell we want, and we could still get away with that crap.
And they still are, by and large.
Here's something else also. Did you see this article, which leads more to the problems in the White House, is about administration proposing the new energy drilling and leasing up to several million acres of land off of Virginia and Alaska.
Yeah.
When I read that, I said, you know, they don't care. They're so ingrained against any attack from anybody doing anything to them to remove them from power, they figured, what the hell, let's shoot the whole shotload of guns. Send out the buckshot and do everything we want to do now in the next 2 years and see if we can get away with it.
Without a doubt, the most arrogant administration in history, and probably that brings up a question. You say what they can get away with and so forth. The I word has come up a little bit as of late. We had Jack Murtha mention it over the weekend, and now he's backpedaled from it a bit. And of course, we've had John Conyers and others in the past. Do you think that's anything realistic, Jeff, that the Democrats might really try?
Well, I've been talking about it for a while, and when you start getting people like Chuck Hagel talking about impeachment and other Republicans slowly dropping, and I even believe Nancy Pelosi changed her tune a little bit, and I believe there's a call-in phone number that I heard on one of the other talk shows.
Well, I'm not sure that's legit. I tried to check that out today.
All right, that's what I was going to do also. But I'll give an example about impeachment. What my listeners who are giving me feedback with email or writing to me, and this has been going on for several months, if I may just read one paragraph from an email I received yesterday, which I thought summed up what the listeners, my listeners at least, are feeling. This is from David in Colorado, I believe. And if I got the state wrong, I apologize. David says, I'm curious if you agree that Bush should be impeached. We wrote back and said, yes, we do. He says, I think his actions as a human being, not even as a president, are absolutely disgraceful, and believe that he should be impeached on principle. And this is the next key line that I thought was the best way to sum up impeachment. I don't know that we would be any better off if that were to happen, but it would hopefully send a message that the American people are fed up. Perhaps it would serve as a reminder that they work for us. And I think that's the bottom line about impeachment, whether it's right, wrong, or indifferent, whether it's going to hold up the process of pushing bills forward in the Congress and the Senate. The bottom line is we need to show the world we police what's going on in our own country, and enough is enough that we decide if the system doesn't work, we remove the people from the system through legal means and move on and clean up our act. And I think, honestly, impeachment does have to take place at this point, because the arrogance that you said of the George Bush administration with the energy drilling and with the AIDS left and right and with the Abramoff and with everything that's going on, the scandal, even the prostitution ring, God knows where that's going to lead. There's so much garbage going on that seem unrelated. But when you tie all the little pieces together and you start following the emails and you start following the links and you start hearing the ex-CIA analysts coming out and talking about Cheney was in charge of this during Iraq, Cheney was in charge of this during 9/11, you start to wonder what damn floodwaters are ready to break out. And I think it's going to be so forceful that as you see ABC and other media outlets like BBC starting to actually report negative news on George Bush, that Pelosi and et al. And the Democratic Party will have to start taking it seriously, not just throwing out feelers, but I think you're starting to see the front end of the bubble breaking.
Well, and I think we also have to think about the future as well. And I hope the Republicans remain cognizant of the fact that someday it may be a Republican, it may be a Democrat. Someday we may be facing another problem like this. And a future politician might think twice about pulling off another Iraq war or some of the shenanigans the Bushes have if they know that the impeachment is ready and waiting for them and that we've used it in the past and we'll use it again. The Republicans should remember that.
Here's the problem, the other side of the coin that we're talking about impeachment. With all my fervor and with all the fervor of the listeners such as I have saying impeachment is important to set an example, I'm going to say it, and it's going to be straightforward and it's going to be honest. Why aren't people screaming at this point? And I'm going to go back to the perfect example, and I'm sorry if I'm going over old ground. Where's the listeners flooding the phone lines on your show, on Bob's show, on Mark's show? And anytime something's brought up, the dribs and drabs where they'll write you and they'll say they're for or against something, but they won't verbalize it. Are we a society that's become so immune to what's happening? We figured, America will survive. They're all corrupt. That's the catch-all phrase. Most people I know are independents. They're neither Democrats or Republicans because they feel everyone's in the same boat. And there's some truth to that, of course. But it still shouldn't prevent people from getting on a phone line when there's an open forum such as your show, such as Bob's show, whoever's show on the progressive right or the Democratic side, and talk about the issue. There should be 10 people calling in right now talking about impeachment with you, right this minute.
Well, 10 calls about it and a million people demonstrating in Washington, and we're just not getting that, and I don't understand why not, but we're not. The apathy.
It's frustrating. The analogy, you said apathy, it's like watching people, and this is a very poor analogy, but it's the only visual that comes to mind. It's watching people get beaten up in front of you. You're shocked. Nobody's doing anything about it. You want to say something. You don't even scream out, but yet you continue to watch, but yet you turn to your neighbor going, that's terrible. Yeah, that's terrible, isn't it? But nobody's doing anything, and we're on that edge of move it somewhere. Either take action or walk away, but don't just stand there saying, yes, we agree something's wrong, and nobody's talking about it. You had the marches around 828.org, the website, where they had April 28th, all the impeachment things all across the country, and even in some of the countries around the world. A lot of the events, you check it out, 828.org, you'll see all the pictures of what all these people did. The media, very few media outlets reported this. It's as if there's only 27 people, Guy James and Jeff Allenwolf, talking about impeachment, and the rest of the world doesn't care, which is not true. There are a lot more numbers out there, thousands of people out there, if not hundreds of thousands of people. If you put it to a vote, they would agree for impeachment. But the media doesn't report it. Nobody calls in. We're not vociferous enough to talk about this. Phone lines are not ringing left and right. That's why the Democrats pull back and say, well, we can talk about it, but they're in a quandary whether to go ahead with it, file it officially, and start doing the investigations.
Cowardice. And, and especially, Jeff, in light of all you just said, here we are in the fabulous new real information age where we can correspond with one another at a moment's notice, cell phones and the internet and all, and we should be more well informed. We should be more activists than ever before, and yet it seems as though we've slipped. And I just can't put my finger on. Well, part of it is we don't have a draft, and I'm not saying we need to. We should. But there certainly was a correlation between the huge protest in the Vietnam War and now between the draft and that. I mean, there definitely was a correlation there.
Right. If I was doing an entertainment show right now, like in the old days when I did terrestrial radio and I wasn't doing political agenda, and I talked about, for lack of a better subject matter, Anna Nicole Smith, which we're all tired about, and I started talking about theories of did she kill herself, did someone kill her, phone lines would be lighting up.
Oh, yeah.
You talk about a real situation on your show right now, where are the people? Anybody has an opinion out there? I'm putting a challenge to the listeners out there. Anyone out there who has an opinion on impeachment? Are we out of our minds? Should we have impeachment hearings going? Are we going the wrong course? But to be apathetic, listeners, to the Guy James listeners, and to my listeners who knew I was going to be on your show through my website and such, call in. Give an opinion. Maybe we're missing something, but call Guy's show and talk about this as an agenda, as an actual piece of information that needs to be discussed, and show everyone that they're out there involved.
You know, you were right about something earlier about a lot of people now not necessarily wanting to identify themselves with a party. And I saw a report today that it's the lowest in a survey that they've ever taken. Rasmussen came out with a national telephone survey of a survey of over 15,000 people and found that only 31% now they say they belong to the GOP. 31%. That's the lowest ever. And you know, the Democrats are only at about 36.5, but a 5.5 point spread is pretty good. So that leaves independents there at 30-some percent. And so a lot of people have fallen on the website.
Guy, and the same thing you're talking about independence, and I've gone on the websites when we first started our show and posted some, pieces and just show them I'm there and let them know about the show, and you would think people would either agree or disagree with my opinion. You know what they blasted me about?
What?
They attacked me because I listed myself as a Democrat.
Ah.
They said, get off the website. You should be an independent. They were mad because I was using party labels. This was not just one person. This was dozens of people on three different websites. I got the sense in a very unscientific poll that people are upset. If you say you're a Republican, if you say you're a Democrat, there's something incredibly wrong with you, that you should be an independent. And my point to them was, it has nothing to do with a label. It has to do with talking about what's happening today, the Iraq war, global warming, the issues, not the labels. I couldn't care if you're a midget from Mars and you're a right-wing progressive communist. If you're talking about global warming and you want to discuss it and have a dialogue about it, that's more important to me than who you actually are or what party you belong to.
Oh, I absolutely agree. And, you know, I want to know what I'm dealing with. I don't want anybody to sit back and hide their views. Be upfront with them. I don't know why we can't have dialogue with one another. I mean, I did. I had a dialogue this morning with a guy who is as far opposite of me politically as you could be. And I think he knows I think he's stupid, but I think he knows that, but I've never come out and told him so. He lives close by, so I guess I shouldn't do that, but there's so many people that just aren't willing to put their neck on the chopping block and say, here's my view, here's what I believe, here's what I'm for. But there's, you know, I'd just rather sit back and not say anything, not do anything, and let the rest of the world go by, and I'm awfully tired of that myself.
Yeah, it baffles me because, like I said, that my feedback is, not to belabor the point, is emails. Yours is phone calls and emails. And we know the level we get on whatever end, and it's just sometimes you scratch your head and wonder. You get this love your show, but nothing about what the issues are, nothing about if you have phone lines calling in. You had that one guy yesterday, which I was cracking up about, the wackadoodle you had on.
Oh, yeah.
The diehard schmooch, schmooch, schmooch on George Bush's rear end.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy didn't have a leg to stand on, and I was telling my girlfriend, I said, this is funny, guy, that was brilliant radio, and I loved it. And I said the one thing about that, I told her over dinner, let these people speak, because the more they speak, the stupider they sound. I love when people espouse a viewpoint that they just totally go by the wayside when you hear them go on and on about, we got to stay in Iraq. He was blasting you about, you were against the American people.
I
never heard that. You never said that. We have to stay in Iraq. And what do we do if we leave? And these people exist. This is the small 10 to 15% or the 20% diehards who think George Bush is doing a wonderful job and the Iraq war is wonderful. Yet daily we have deaths. Over 100, the bloodiest month in this year in the Iraq war. And we're spending, what was the report I just read yesterday, $500 billion plus dollars on the war. What we could have done with $500 billion.
Incredible.
For AIDS research, for global warming, for new technologies, for infrastructure, for health care, it boggles my mind, and yet the mass majority of people sit on the sidelines and are silent.
I think we had a stat on the show yesterday, day before, I'm not sure which, that said it could send half the high school graduates in the country through a four-year college degree. And yet look at all that number of kids that won't even get to go to college because they don't have the money. And that's where, of course, we're borrowing all that money, that $500 billion, and the note's going to come due some of these days, and our kids and grandkids are going to have to pony up for it. We've done probably the most stupid thing I've ever heard during a war, had a tax cut. let's just cut taxes and let's borrow all the money for this war that I'll keep going on for ad infinitum. There's some crazy stuff is going on in this whole thing, and these are interesting times, that's for sure.
You know, what really gets me, and continuing on, we're talking about the impeachment, I'm getting a lot of emails from people outside the country that are more engaged. I hate to say this, and I'm going to sound anti-American, and I don't mean to be, obviously, because I live in America, I'm an American, I love the country, and et cetera, but I've got more people from Italy, Sweden, Germany, France, you name it. You name the country, I'm getting emails, legitimately, who are loving the dialogue, who are not, you know, anti-American, they're not pro-American, they're just interested in world events, and they're more concerned about our stuff than our own people are, to some extent.
You know, right you are, Jeff. I get many from people overseas as well. A lot of Canadians, for one, and a lot of people from Norway and Sweden and,
exactly.
and Germany.
Right?
Oh, yes.
Impassioned in their writing. Thank you for talking about this. You need to change this. And not that your system sucks or our system is better. America is great. This is an Italian writing me, a Russian writing me, saying America is great. And they're talking like they're already a citizen here. And I'm saying, where the hell are the listeners, the callers and the emailers from these people who live in the United States who are just as impassioned as these people from outside the country. It's almost embarrassing.
Oh, and we're hearing all the time that thank you for taking a stand. We were beginning to think that the American people were all just willing to lay down and take it from Bush. And
you just read my email. You actually took the one line that's showing up in most of the emails, that same exact, somewhat paraphrased, thank you for speaking up. We thought America, we thought everyone loved Bush. Their perception was that all of America was silent and we were the only two guys in the world, your show and my show, love, you know, or anti-Bush and are talking up, which is not true. It's just most of our people are silent.
Oh, it's embarrassing. I live in an area where there's so many people that come here for vacations, and, you know, and speaking to them, and they're reticent to talk to you about it at first because they do think all Americans think that George Bush is a god, and they're always so surprised when you tell them, no, I despise his policies, and probably him personally as well, and they're always really surprised to hear that.
I don't know. I don't know what the answer is other than keep talking. What you're doing, what Mark's doing, what Bob's doing, what I'm doing, what John and Joe and et cetera, and all the other hosts, Randy and Mike Malloy and Tom Hartman, et cetera. But it just baffles me that, and again, I go back to the old statement I made. People have heard my show. It's not an ego thing. I think we're doing the same dialogue that the other shows are doing, even though they're on nationally syndicated shows. With the same energy, the same passion, the same work ethic, we don't get the same type of support. I don't expect the numbers to equal what they get because they're heard on hundreds of shows. But you'd expect in a ratio there'd be more activism. There'd be more feedback. There'd be more phone calls. There'd be more emails. There'd be more people saying, wow, thank God progressive radio is still around. And thank God, you know, God, you guys are doing a great job.
Well, because our listeners have to really be dedicated. They can't be tooling down the road in the car, although it's technically possible now. But normally they're not tooling down the road in their car and happen to just stop by and listen for something to do while they're heading home from work. I mean, the people that listen to our shows are generally very involved, and they're actually sitting there, you know, listening. So I don't know what the answer is. I don't know how to get more people involved. I work on that constantly, and I know you do as well. And I can only hope we'll be more successful with it in the future. Jeff, I want to thank you for being on the program today.
Thank you, Jeff. I appreciate it very much, and good luck with the rest of the show. I'll keep listening.
Always enjoy talking to you. Jeff,
thank you, Mike.
Alan Wolf, ladies and gentlemen. Ah, yes, we're coming up toward the top of the hour here in a moment or two, and we've got Dave McMichael, former CIA analyst, coming up with us after the news at the top of the hour, and we're going to talk about George trying to save my ass tenant. And isn't that exactly what he's up to right now? Boy, what a shameful. I don't know how you feel about it. Maybe you feel differently about it. Maybe you're happy he's coming up and saying some things about the Bush administration that he is. But in my opinion, all he's done is made himself look even worse. He's made himself look like a willing accomplice to this whole thing for money. And here they are talking about this madam in Washington going to release names and so forth. I think George Tenet just is about as good a prostitute as there is in Washington, D.C. He's got some friends, of course. And, yes, I do think the media should put the names out. There was a time when I wouldn't have thought that off this madam's list. I do think they should put the names out. If it hadn't been for the blue dress and all that, I might have said, no, let's keep it private. But I'm one of those people, I do believe an eye for an eye. And I do believe if your political opponent stabs you in the back that you can go after him. So, yes, I guess you knew that about me. I'm one of those. Of course, there might be a bunch of Democrats on that lady's list when it comes out. And as I understand it, there are going to be some names out in the next day or two. It'll be interesting to see who's on it. It says there's some more people in the Bush administration and ambassadors and I don't know what all, some high-profile people in Washington, D.C. There's a couple of people I wouldn't mind telling you that I don't mind telling you that I'd love to see their names on that list. All I know is mine's not on it. That's for sure. Well, we're going to pause for news at the top of the hour here in the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. Our thanks to Jeff Alan Wolf for being with us here on the first segment of the show. And we're going to be back right after the news. Stay where you are.
This is the Quality News Network. In Baghdad, an additional 4,000 U.S. troops have arrived as part of the administration's 12-week-old security surge. The 4th Brigade, 2nd Striker Brigade combat team from Fort Lewis, Washington, is the fourth of five units being sent to the region to assist Iraqi forces put an end to sectarian violence. President Bush has vetoed the $124 billion war spending bill, which included an October 1st deadline for troop withdrawal. The president is meeting today with Democrat and Republican leaders to discuss a new measure both parties can agree on. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice will arrive in Egypt today for 2 days of meetings beginning tomorrow with Iraq's Arab neighbors. Rice is there to increase economic and diplomatic support for Iraq and hopes to do so by convincing its neighbors they have more to lose from a destabilized Iraq. U.S. authorities still have not yet confirmed the death of Iraq's top al-Qaeda leader, Abu al-Mazri, who, according to accounts from tribal leaders, was killed yesterday in a battle between militants. U.S. leaders say without the body, a positive identification cannot be made, while an insurgent group released a statement saying al-Mazri is safe and still fighting. In Turkey, the ruling party is petitioning the country's parliament to allow presidential elections to be decided directly by voters instead of parliament. Turkey in recent days has seen demonstrators protesting dissatisfaction with the government they believe is trying to transform the country from a secular nation to an Islamic state. In Jerusalem, Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert is trying to hang on to his job. An emergency cabinet meeting has been called to discuss the scathing report that criticized the Israeli leader's handling of the 34-day war against Hezbollah in Lebanon last year. Critics blame Olmert for the failed conflict and have called for his resignation. Tony Blair announced today he will be stepping down effective within a few weeks. The 10-year British Prime Minister made the statement at a Labour Party rally and added a Scotsman, Gordon Brown, will probably be the next UK minister, Prime Minister. Blair's popularity has diminished in recent months due to his support of the Iraq War. Thousands of people participated in pro-immigrant marches and rallies across the nation yesterday. Protesters were smaller than anticipated and were non-violent except in Los Angeles, where police used rubber bullets and tear gas to break up rock-throwing crowds near downtown and MacArthur Park. Several people were injured, including a television news crew. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business are next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Dutch researchers report women who are left-handed appear to have a higher risk of dying from cancer and heart disease. Scientists say more study is needed, but it does appear left-handed women generally have a shorter lifespan. The FDA says it's investigating reports at least 4,000 pets have died as a result of food contaminated by Chinese additives. More than 150 bands of pet foods have been recalled. In addition, government investigators have discovered the poison kibble has been used as chicken and hog feed nationwide. Police have arrested four JetBlue airline employees and a New York corrections officer for shopping sprees paid by credit cards accidentally left by passengers dashing to catch their flights. Intel is eliminating more than 1,000 jobs in New Mexico plant that produces silicon wafers. The company is discontinuing. Intel is offering workers severance packages and employment elsewhere in the company. Some of the employees being laid off have been with Intel for more than 25 years. Restaurant chain Yum Brands, a company whose portfolio includes KFC and Taco Bell, reports a 14% rise in quarterly net income, A fall in U.S. earnings was more than offset by robust sales in China and other overseas markets. Light sweet crude is trading at $63.80 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And on Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones is up 103 points, the NASDAQ is up 30, and the S&P 500 is up 12. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Jay Gallet.
not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network on this Wednesday afternoon, a beautiful 92-degree, sunny, few clouds in the sky day here in Southwest Florida. I hope it's nice where you are as well. As promised, and let's just get right to it, I promise you that we'd have one of our favorite guests on the program today, Dave McMichael, former CIA analyst. Dave, are you with us?
I'm on my end of the phone.
All right. Well, you're on our end, too, and everybody's listening, and we told a lot of people you're going to be on the show today. I understand that you've been somewhat busy with this George Tenet situation.
Yeah, well, this is certainly the flap of the moment, and I think every one of us are six members of the Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity who signed on to the letter to George Tenet, wondering why it's taken him 4 years to speak up, and that perhaps he might wish to return his Congressional Medal of Freedom and perhaps consider donating some of the royalties from his book, which he will doubtless earn, to assist the families of American servicemen who have been killed or injured in Iraq. We have not yet had a response from Mr. from Mr. Tenet, but
and I don't think you're going to.
Well, you never know. You never know.
I would like to alert everybody, those of you that haven't read this this letter, it's about a five-page letter, and it's a terrific letter. It's to the point, let me tell you. And you can find that on Larry Johnson's, for one, at least one place I know where it's at, Larry Johnson's noquarter.typepad.com. And Larry's a guest on the show now and then, and he's got the whole letter on there. You guys put your heads together and came up with this letter, and I must say to Mr. Tenet, if I were in his shoes and got this letter, I wouldn't feel so good about it.
Well, it wasn't intended to make him feel good, and I should add that the principal drafter of this letter was, in fact, Larry Johnson, who was a very energetic and intelligent individual, and My only contribution was to urge him to remove some words in the first draft, which couldn't be used on television, you know.
Oh, those are some of the words I would have had in there, too. I have to be honest. And you had Jim Marcinkowski on there, and Ray McGovern, and trying to think who else.
Vinny Canestrero.
Oh, yeah, and Phil and Giraldi.
Phil Giraldi, yeah.
Coming from this group, if I were Mr. Tenet, I would take this rather seriously, and I'm wondering if you think, after watching his interview the other night on 60 Minutes, which I thought was a disaster for him, I'm wondering if he isn't having second thoughts about this whole book thing and all. I think he must be surprised by the response to it.
Well, you know, Guy, there's an old saying, oh, that mine enemy would write a book.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, he's catching it from both sides. There's going to be a lot from those members of the administration. Actually, as you can see, he's very, very, very soft on George Bush, describing him as a man of great integrity and so forth, and has just been misled by those around him, but the neocon types are after him right away. Ron Perl, of course, was quick to declare that Tenet's statement that he had passed Perl on his way into George Bush's office to brief him on September the 12th of 2001, and that Pearl had said, well, Saddam Hussein is going to have to pay for this. And think, right. What is that all about? But now, of course, Pearl comes out declaring, and he's probably got the hotel receipts to demonstrate it, that on that date he was in France. So whether it was that day or 3 days afterward doesn't take away. But that's the kind of griping and carping that will go on about this book. He's got this point wrong. He's got that point wrong.
Well, I did see him say that. He said, well, I might have gotten the date wrong, but he did say it.
Yeah, but that's the way these little battles are fought. And
Look what they did to Richard Clark. Tried to impugn Richard Clark's integrity when.
Of course. When you see, it's Mike Schur and Dick Clark and others who, were heavily involved in the counterterrorism activities there, both in the Clinton and in the Bush administrations, were simply charged with having failed, and now they, of course, come back and say, "Well, the reason we failed is the people wouldn't listen to us." But this is let me put it to you this way, Guy. I'm going to use a lot of cliches and old saws today, if you don't mind.
I do not mind.
Well, okay. John Kennedy said this after the Bay of Pigs, as you may recall. He did not originate the saying, but it's applicable. Victory has 100 fathers. Defeat is an orphan. And we're seeing a situation in Iraq where whether there's been an acknowledged defeat so far, it certainly has not been a victory. So no one is. If in fact the invading forces have been met with the flowers and candy as advertised, you wouldn't be hearing any of this right now.
Well, I also remember John Kennedy. I was a young man at the time, but I remember John Kennedy coming on TV, and there were all the reports of bad CIA intelligence and all that about the Bay of Pigs. But I also remember John Kennedy coming on the TV and being man enough to say, this stops at my desk. This is my fault.
Oh, yeah. And he also said, by the way, with reference to accepting Alan Dulles' resignation as the then director of Central Intelligence, he said to him, Alan, if this were a parliamentary system, I'd have to resign. But it's not, so you have to resign. So.
Yeah. yeah, but how refreshing it would be to see somebody taking responsibility once again, especially in an administration that said, personal responsibility.
Not to get off the immediate subject, but my comment when I was still putting out the magazine Unclassified after the fallout from the Waco massacres, if mm-hmm. you will, is Janet Reno had just been appointed Attorney General, and she said, well, I'll take full responsibility, and the news magazines and the op-eds and lead editorials are, wow, how refreshing.
Yes.
You're taking full responsibility, and I wrote, I said, what does this mean? No dessert for a week? I don't know.
Well, anybody that knows Janet Reno knows that's totally within her character to do that, though. She's a straight shooter. Back to George Tenet. Here's a guy that's suddenly trying to justify his behavior in this whole matter when in my mind is beyond all justification. And he's a guy who chose to be complicit in the lies that led us into the Iraq War. I think he's got blood on his hands along with George Bush and Dick Cheney and Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz and Pearl and the whole gang. And yet he's trying to wash his hands of it now.
Yeah, well, that's what one would do in his situation, unless he were just sensible enough to, keep his head down, his mouth shut. But, he's catching it from a number of directions here. One, as they say, from the people in the administration who are you know, quick to declare that they were ill-served by the intelligence system, the intelligence community, of which George Tenet at that time was the head. And if they hadn't had all that bad information, things would have gone so much better, and on and on and on. The second criticism that comes is from you know, colleagues of mine who take this back a little further to I would take it, well, we can go back to the CIA has screwed up on a number of occasions since its formation, but in the era of Bill Casey in the 80s, a saying began to circulate around the halls in Langley. There used to be two categories of intelligence, right? Humint, human intelligence, and SIGINT, you know, intelligence from signals, from interception of messages, right?
Uh-huh.
And Bill Casey has added a whole new category, imaginant.
Oh.
And this was lay at the background of the Iran-Contra scandal. It was carried on certainly during the period when the first George Bush, rejuvenated, if you will, Bob Gates, and brought him back and put him in there. But there's a continual history of this, and many former agency people have written about this. My friend John Gentry from up here in Falls Church has put out a book a dozen years ago called How CIA Intelligence Misserves the Nation, which is, and he's a longtime analyst there, and he just looks into the system where the pressure comes down bureaucratically to make sure that the analyses put forward are supporting the policies. You know, and of course, the intelligence system doesn't make policy. It shouldn't even comment on policy, but it should focus on providing, you know, unbiased and objective information. And it's those in the upper reaches of the bureaucracy, and I don't just say this happens only in the intelligence system, but if you are in disagreement with or putting forward information that doesn't support what the boss already has decided to do, you find yourself not being invited to the executive board meetings anymore.
Yeah.
And this is bureaucracy, and it is a bureaucracy.
Well Dave, I have to ask the question in regard to a guy like Tenet, who's his master? The American people, who's he loyal to? Who's he protecting? The American people or the president?
Well, I would say that he is an appointee of the president, okay? And by that, he agrees to support the policies and assist the policies of the president in ways which are in accordance with the job he has been given to do. If he comes to feel and believe or even know that the policies being pursued, in this case by the president, are wrong, and that the views of the intelligence community, which he also represents, by the way, okay, and to which he is responsible, are being twisted and distorted and misrepresented, he's got two choices to make. He can, after he's confronted his boss and the president and found that that this information is not going to change what he's doing, it's at that point you resign. And when you resign, you can do it in two ways. You can simply say, I want to spend more time with my family, which he did, by the way. And the second thing is to resign and say, I resigned over this issue, and here's the issue, and make his point at a time when it could have given lots of members of Congress pause before they granted this authority of the president to, you know, take us into war at his whim, so to speak. Now, this is not, though, in the American political tradition. The only leading figure I can think of in American history who resigned in a relatively similar situation and over an issue of going to war was Woodrow Wilson's Secretary of State, William Jennings Bryan, who simply said the reasons being given by the administration, by Wilson's people, for entering the First World War, these claims of violation of U.S. Neutrality rights and so forth, simply did not square either with the facts or with international law. And if there's one person in the history of U.S. foreign policy, and it's something I used to specialize in, I've read many tomes on this, if there's one person who's almost universally, decried as Secretary of State, is William Jennings Bryan. Not that he didn't have a few faults, but it's the fact that in a critical situation, he took this extraordinary step, at least for the American political tradition, of publicly resigning his office and explaining why he did it.
Well, there are few men that have the courage of their convictions like that. The last one I can think of was Nixon's Attorney General, on the Saturday Night Massacre there.
Elliot only died last year, as you know.
And he stood up and said, "No, I'm not going to do it." There aren't many folks like that around anymore. Well, we know that Tenet was in on a lot of this. I think the most contemptible part of all of this is this business about the slam dunk. I don't know when I've been more offended by anything that a policymaker might say, or somebody in his position would say that. He said the slam dunk was about, well, the slam dunk is we could sell it to the American public. It wasn't that the intelligence was a slam dunk, but that they had enough information or phony information to sell it to the public. I found that particularly contemptible.
Yeah, but he did make it clear that he didn't jump off the couch and wave his arms when he said that.
Yeah, well,
and that should excuse him, I suppose.
I guess so. I don't know.
I think, or at least hope, that as this is examined, along with so many of the other things, not to stray far afield, but the Gonzales issue and so forth, is that it helps the American people when aided sufficiently by the press, which I think they are being now much more than over the last few years, to understand that these deified individuals at the top of our political structure who are making these earth-shaking decisions not only put their pants on one leg at a time, but some of them can't even tie their shoes properly.
Oh, I so much agree.
That's important as a citizen to understand that.
Absolutely. I often say that to my listeners. Please don't assume everybody you see in the administration, any administration, is just really a hell of a lot smarter than you are. A lot of these people are just regular folks that there's some doggone smart people too, but I think it's a cross section, and I think your point is well taken that a lot of these folks are just, you're right, they can get their pants on.
But the point I'm making, really, Guy, is as a citizen, you don't do a Dan Rather. You remember what he said at the time of going to war in Iraq?
Right.
He says, if the president says it, I'm going to be all for him and totally in support. Well, that's, that's not the way the citizen of a republic or the members of Congress should react to the White House or the President of the United States, and it's we've gone through so much of this in the last 30 plus years, Tonkin Gulf and Iran-Contra, and now this, and you wonder, as I've said to people, how many times will the American public and its Congress buy the same bridge?
That's right. That's the most disconcerting part of all this, is we don't seem to be learning from these episodes. And it keeps going, and the more it keeps going, the more apathetic the public gets, and the more apt we are to have maladministrations in like we have now. Well, Dave, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. We always learn a lot from you. And your organization?
Yeah, Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. We are VIPs.
Yeah. .org?
You know, I don't know if Ray McGovern, who's been the driving spirit in this, has even gotten us a website, but people who are interested, and Ray is a very tolerant guy, so I'll give you his email address. It's rrmcgovern, McGovern at AOL.com.
All right.
Yeah, I got that. If you're interested in knowing what we're doing and who we're involved with and who we are, send an email to Ray. He'll probably forward it to me, and then I'll have to answer it.
Very good. Yeah, Ray's a busy guy, too. You guys both spend a lot of time talking, informing the public on what's going on. Dave, thanks so much for being on the program today. We really appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure for me to do that, and I hope, you know, I make a little bit of sense from time to time.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Dave.
Bye.
Dave McMichael, former CIA analyst, and for those of you that see Ray McGovern on TV and Larry Johnson and Jim Marcinkowski and all those guys, the six of them wrote that letter to Tenet demanding that he give back his Medal of Freedom and pretty much chastising till hell won't have it about this whole affair. They're thoroughly ashamed of his actions in this, all being former CIA analyst, and I don't blame them. I see... living close by here, we have a former CIA director, Porter Goss, the most recent one, and he won't even talk about being in the CIA anymore. Won't discuss it. The local newspaper went out to interview him here recently. He lives out on Sanibel Island, and he wouldn't talk about it. Wouldn't even talk, say a word about being in the CIA. So I wonder what the thing is. I imagine Porter Goss has got a lot to say about what happened to him and while he was in the CIA and all. He went in to clean it up, and it didn't get fixed up quite so well when he was in there. So you wonder. You do. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
This is Gore Vidal. Can you name the one country on Earth where the government can steal elections, strip away basic rights, spy on civilians, launch wars based on lies, and where the people do not take over the nation's capital in protest? If you said the United States, you'd be right. So let's remedy that by calling our Congress members and asking them to support the impeachment of George Bush and Dick Cheney. This message.
Saturday in the park, I think.
such a long time. For today, slow.
Welcome back to the Guy James Show here at the bottom of the second hour of the program. Glad to have each and every one of you along with us today. Hello to all you folks over at iTunes. Happy to speak to you today. And you can give us a call here on the program, 866-546-5254. And we do hope you'll give us a call. You want to know how petty the Bush administration can get? Did you see the story about Joan Baez? I love Joan Baez. Love her. Always have. Got a chance to meet her one time, and she's just as real a person as you'll ever run into in your life. It seems that John Mellencamp was going to perform at Walter Reed Army Hospital in Washington, D.C., and he invited Joan Baez to perform with him. And it seems that the folks at Walter Reed uninvited her, that she did not get to perform. You talk about petty. Yes, she demonstrated and sang and all against this war and against Vietnam as well, but not against the soldiers, for God's sake. And you got to tell me that the soldiers in Army Walter Reed Army Hospital wouldn't have been entertained by meeting the great and hearing the great Joan Baez, a legend. 66-year-old Joan Baez, and they wouldn't let her sing at Walter Reed. The bastards. And speaking about bastards, in case you were still wondering why the Republican brand is still in trouble, here's some more evidence from Central Utah. There, Don Larson, not the great pitcher for the New York Yankees who pitched a perfect game in a World Series in about, what, 1958 or 60, I remember when I was a kid. Anyway, I digress. Don Larson, the chairman of the Utah County GOP Central Committee, told a meeting that illegal immigrants were, quote, Satan's minions, end quote. He said... He said that illegal immigrants, quote, hate the American people, end quote, and again, quoting, are determined to destroy this country. And they're aided by the Democratic Party, he says, which, in Larson's words, is trying to destroy Christian America. Unless you think he's alone in these views, another speaker, only identified as Joe, told the Reporters Covenant meeting that illegal immigrants are Marxist and under the influence of the devil. Oh, boy. Glad to know these ardent Republicans are out there making speeches like that. Oh, my God. Fascinating that people like that live on this earth. I guess it's the western branch of the Ku Klux Klan. I don't know. Let's head on over to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, is this the real Guy James Show?
The one and only, I think.
The one and only?
Well, maybe not only. There is a famous soccer player by that name as well.
Oh, really? From which country?
England.
England?
He was famous.
He was famous. Well, Guy, this is Eric from Vermont. You're doing a great job on the show tonight.
Thank you, Eric. Good to hear from you.
I need to, a lot of times, de-stress before I can actually be semi-coherent. The soccer player. Well, okay. We had a little storm up here about 2 weeks ago, but I wanted to tune into like what we were talking about on the chat room, on the head-on radio chat room.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And we were talking about kind of like really a chess game, and it was really that you had John Edwards with a commercial, send it back just the way it was for the impeachment veto thing, and we had seven Democrats that sort of backtrashed their party on forcing the reconsideration of the veto on the war funds and the troop withdrawal, and we had a whole bunch of things going today. Boy.
Well, where do you stand on that? Where do you stand on that? What do you think?
I don't know. To me, it's like 64 squares. You got not really the black and the white guys on whatever side, and we're just talking about chessboard pieces here, you know, nothing racial, of course. But you know, we have two different colors of players, and it's much more complicated. There's a lot more stuff that's going on in the middle, and in the middle of the board, where these politicians don't know what happened in November to understand that what the hell's coming down with the American people. I sat there before I got on to the show and to the chat room, and I was listening to these callers, Democrats, Republicans, independent lines coming on to C-SPAN during the vote, during that veto override vote earlier this afternoon, and I didn't hear one person say anything positive about Bush's veto. I said, let's go, let's get him out. Where the country is right now, I don't know. And I think that's what the politicians on both sides of the aisle are being concerned about. So I don't really know what the right strategy is. You know, I mean, it's a chess game, and you move out five, seven moves ahead of the game and say, well, if he moves this here, I'll move this here, or I'll move that there. And we really don't know what's going on behind the back door scenes very much.
Well, I think you're right, and the only caveat I'll throw in there about the chess game analogy and all is when we're playing chess, we don't have people dying when we make the wrong move, and right now, death and destruction is the order of the day in Iraq, and something needs to be done. Somebody needs to force the issue somehow. And I don't know. I'm not sure I know what the answer is. I do know I would defund this war right now. I do know. That's what I would do. But I don't think I'm going to hear a lot of my senators and congressmen say that they agree.
Well, you know as well as I do. I've been to Washington. I marched and so on and so forth. You know. But, I mean, my goodness gracious, what we need to do is, in my heart, what the chess game is for these politicians on the Dems, the Republican side, whatever it is, in my heart, what I say is, like, this is civil war. I'd like to go back 18 months in 2005 when the great representative from Pennsylvania, John Murtha, came out with, like, deploy the troops back to the perimeters, guard the line, protect the interests, and let these guys duke it out for a civil war that they've been fighting for 1,400 years, and let them figure out what the hell is going on there. In addition, bring in some UN people. Start bringing in all this stuff. We're not going to find that in this administration, but I think that's where we want to go in very rough, crude terms. And that's not happening. It's not going to happen until this administration is really completely neutralized, along with the PNAC people, along with the Leo Strauss followers of Feith, and all those people that came along with Leo Strauss that came from Nazi Germany in the late 30s to escape the oppression that he experienced from Hitler and that regime, and taught at the Chicago Law School as a very downtrodden kind of political scientist, and trained his disciples. And we have their disciples, and they are in control of everything that's going on in this particular administration, and we need to expose that to the American people so that they are not so.
We need to know the history of where are these guys thinking. These guys didn't just pop up out of nowhere. You're right. They've been indoctrinated for years with the Leo Strauss teaching and doctrine, and they've been indoctrinated with it, and the public needs to know where and why and so forth. That you know, I would venture to say 99% of the people in this country have no idea what you're talking about, and they need to know.
But how do you tell them, Guy? I mean, because what you have here on your talk show, and what we are allowed to say in the mainstream media, and what is like surgically correct in terms of cut times, in terms of, well, we don't want that on there. That could be detrimental to GE because they are part of the Eisenhower warning of the military-industrial complex or whatever it is. I mean, where do you expose these American people that being a good patriot, a good American, a good person that believes in the Constitution has been uprooted by these people that have had so much control over what they have no knowledge of because of the knowledge that they're not getting.
That's the whole thing is going back to the disparity in the media, I believe. And I think the fall of the Fairness Doctrine, when that happened, it's allowed this. We don't have a voice. We don't have near the voice that we ought to have or could have or should have. And I don't know when we ever will. But we certainly need to get the American public educated on some of these things. And you're so right, Eric. You're bringing up about Leo Strauss. If you tried to go talk about that on mainstream media right now, they would boot your butt so fast you wouldn't know what hit you. If you told them you wanted to talk about that, you wouldn't get past first base.
But you can get your butt kicked off first base, and I don't have to worry about it because I'm in my little convenient room listening to the internet, and it doesn't go anyplace. And still, the American people don't get to know anything at all, except I go to work. I work for the U.S. government in a capacity, and I try to sort of like sneak little things back and forth to people on a one-on-one basis, and that's about all I can do.
I might probably analyze your voice pattern on here and hunt you down.
I don't worry about it too much.
Hey, I got a whole board full of people here. Eric, good to hear from you, my friend.
You're doing a great job, John.
Thank you. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Let's go over to line one. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. This is Malin from New Jersey.
Hello.
I was just wondering what your feelings were on how the world seems to hate us so much, and I do a lot of traveling, and I realize when we take taxis and that overseas, that they usually tend to side with the anti-Bush people, with the anti-war, and it's done such great damage all around the world in these last 8 years, our reputation. It's a fact that this actually has happened because we see it all the time when we travel. And I just wondered whether if there was some way that we could prove to the world, if we could get an impeachment on the president, would that make a difference in the feelings of the world toward us as a nation?
It's the best thing we could possibly do for relations with other countries, and as particularly the people of other nations, maybe not the governments, but the people from the other nations, the people that really matter. I think it's the best doggone thing we could possibly do to show the world that we're not like George W. Bush. That's the biggest value we would get out of this whole thing.
People are usually very surprised when you approach them because they, but you're an American, you know, and you have to keep telling them that we don't agree with the American people are not the same thing as the government, and at least the administration, the same thoughts. And if you did go past impeachment and you actually went to war crimes, you know how the people in the Middle East hate us so much, and it's going to go on for, I think it's probably going to go on like the Crusades. It'll probably go on for hundreds of years.
Yes.
Because so many people have been killed. If there were to have been, it were to be brought up into war for war crimes, the administration, and brought to The Hague, would that make a difference in their feeling some kind of admonishment that we try to make good on something good out of something bad?
I think so. I definitely think so. I think the great Satan, in their words, maybe might not look quite so evil anymore if we showed them that justice is on our mind and justice is important to us, and bringing war criminals, and there are war criminals in our government, there's no question about it. I think it would be a great thing to show the rest of the world that we're most of all interested in being fair-minded and just, and they don't think that of us right now.
Because I think after World War II, the world thought certainly of the Germans, didn't they, after they had gotten rid of all the real crime-ridden Nazis that really took the major advances against the Allies. I mean, made the major decisions to have so many people killed, plus the Holocaust. It would make such a major difference in. Maybe an impeachment is the closest we're ever going to get to anything.
Well, I would.
But I just think I think what's gone on is beyond that, and it overwhelms me because the media is only good for sound bites. And like you just talking to this man, that's the reason why everyone is so stupid, because they don't know the news, because they're not told enough. They haven't got long enough time to talk about any subject on the news.
Exactly. That's exactly. People just don't, they don't get into the breadth and depth of all these things. And people don't understand, you know, we talked earlier on in the program today. I doubt if 1% of Americans knew anything about Shia and Sunni and their problems with one another and the history of it and the
length. Well, you know, I didn't know a thing before the war. I don't know how about you, but I really didn't know that there were, I mean, like Protestants and Catholics. I had no idea that there were different kinds of Muslims.
But you felt obliged to find out.
Oh, of course.
And that's where the problem is. Most Americans.
It's taken me a long time to figure the whole thing out. In fact, I still can't figure. There are still different groups of each one of those groups. But
of course. Well, so it's like trying to figure Protestantism out. Figuring out, and I am a Protestant, but all the denominations, you know.
Okay, Guy. I just wanted to impress that point on the impeachment, because I think it would make a difference on the feelings of the world about this country.
I certainly do as well, and I am in full support of impeachment of as many of these people in the leadership capacity in this country right now as we could possibly get. We shall see if anybody's got the stomach for it.
Maybe Nancy will have a change of heart. We'll see.
I hope so. Thanks for your call.
Thanks, guys.
Good to
hear
from
you. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Want to hear the ultimate hypocrite? Maybe not the ultimate, but certainly one of them. You know how they're all talking about now. Oh, we can't let the Congress micromanage the war. We can't do that. We've got a commander-in-chief. We've got to let him make the decisions. I give you John McCain.
Mr. President, there is no reason for the United States of America to remain in Somalia. The American people want them home. I believe the majority of Congress wants them home. And to set an artificial date of March 31st or even February 1st, in my view, is not acceptable. The criteria should be to bring them home as rapidly and safely as possible, an evolution which I think could be completed in a matter of weeks. Mr. President, our continued military presence in Somalia allows another situation to arise which could then lead to the wounding, killing, or capture of American fighting men and women. We should do all in our power to avoid that.
Impressive crowd, the haves and the have mores. Some people call you the elite. I call you my base.
Oh, it's true.
Call Guy James now, 1-866-546-5254.
Welcome back to the show. Yes, indeed, you still have time to give us a call here. We've got about, 7 minutes left till the top of the hour. You can get your point in. Give us a call, 866-546-5254, if you like. We take any and all opinions on this program. Yes, we do. Do you think that veto last night is going to cost Bush any more politically? Can it cost him any more politically? Can he slip any further politically than he is right now? I guess the question is he even capable of realizing the political blowback on this is going to be pretty doggone significant? And you've got 21 senators, GOP senators, going to be up for re-election right now. And I think a lot of them are going to start bailing on him. And the media already has started bailing on him, as gutless as they are. I think... the Republicans are going to suffer mightily over this. I think they know it. I think they're doing all they can to spin and twist and turn and put the best possible face on it. But I bet you in the back rooms in the Capitol building right now and in the Senate and House office buildings, I bet there's some pretty serious discussions going on about, oh, my God, what are we going to do? We can't keep spinning this forever. They're on to us. I really believe I know those discussions are taking place. And you can get a few of the congressmen to talk off the record to certain people and say, it's a pretty dire situation. But then they send the spinners out in front of the cameras, and they do what they can to try and put the best possible face on it, but let's tell it like it is. The best possible face on this situation right now is pretty damn ugly, especially when you've got two major generals now, Major General John Batiste and Major General Paul Eaton, both highly respected within the military family, two retired generals who led troops in Iraq. And both of them expressed outrage at Bush's veto of the U.S. Troops Readiness and Veterans Health and Iraq Accountability Act, which was the official name for it. And Batiste said the president vetoed our troops and the American people. His stubborn commitment to a failed strategy in Iraq is incomprehensible. He committed our greatest military to a failed strategy in violation of basic principles of war. His failure to mobilize the nation to defeat worldwide Islamic extremism is tragic. We deserve more from our commander-in-chief and his administration, Major General John Batiste. And Major General Paul Eden, who was in Iraq training, helping train the Iraqi army for quite a long time, he said this administration and the previously Republican-controlled legislature have been the most caustic agents against America's armed forces in memory. Less than a year ago, the Republicans imposed great hardship on the Army and Marine Corps by their failure to pass a necessary funding language. This time, the President of the United States is holding our soldiers hostage to his ego. More than ever apparent, only the Army and the Marine Corps are at war alone without their president's support. Major General Paul Eaton. Two very impressive ex-military men, telling it like it is. Two men whose ideas were shunned by this administration. This administration who is now claiming, which is now claiming that we must let the military people run the war. When the whole thing started, they did not allow them to run the war. It's amazing how these people turn on a dime and decide to, they can spin it. Of course, they know who they're dealing with. It fascinates me what they think, what they know. As a matter of fact, it's not what they think they can get away with. It's what they know they can get away with. They know they can tell that 32 or 34% or whatever it is still remains to be George Bush's base. They know that they can tell them the moon is made of green cheese and they will eat it up. They know it. They know that no matter what they tell them, they'll buy it. Now, I'm ashamed to say that 33 or 34% of the American people are that damn stupid, but I'm afraid they are. I could say gullible, I could say a lot of things, but stupid covers it. It really does. And as an American, I'm ashamed that we have that many stupid people in this country who could do better, who could learn what the story is. But they don't. They just don't. What a shame. I think stubbornness has a lot to do with it with some of these people. Well, we've talked about a lot today. We've talked about the George Tenet situation with Dave McMichael. I want to thank him. I want to thank Billy Shears, music director of the Guy James Show. I want to send a special thanks to Jeff Allen Wolf for being with us on a segment of the program today. Always great to get his input on everything that's going on. I encourage you to listen to Jeff's show, noon to 3. Bob Kincaid in the evening. Mark Levine. We've got great shows here. John Fox. Great programming here on the Head On Radio Network. You know that. I don't have to tell you that. Want to thank you once again for joining us here on the Guy James Show today. Proud member of the Head On Radio Network. And we will be back tomorrow with another good show for you. A couple of good guests we're working on. Got some terrific guests scheduled for next week already. Want to thank you for being with us today. And once again, I want to remind you, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Thanks for listening, gang. See you tomorrow.